go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, off and running on this Friday on the front porch, the fourth day of August 2023. This is the Horn, headon.live. This is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the hours, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round. And, well, whatever time it happens to be in whatever time zone you're listening, whatever time it happens to be when you're listening to the podcast. We try to make this program super accessible. And if you're listening to the podcast, please put a smile on Brother Deacon Ace's face and leave a comment if you and like and subscribe. If you say take the podcast at Apple Podcasts, like it there. If you take the podcast at Spotify, like it there. If you take the podcast at TuneIn Radio, hit that heart button there. Or Podbean. Like and subscribe there. Leave a comment. And most of all, though, tell your friends and neighbors. Because we're coming up on 20 years of this. And that is absolutely amazing to me. And it's, I mean, 20 years? Wow. We're past 20 years of me being back on the air, but 20 years of this as a standalone broadcast. That's February the 4th of 2024. Our online-only anniversary is October the 24th. And we will be 20 years of that in 2025. But at any rate, no, seriously, spread the word. If you listen to this program and you enjoy it, there's a good chance that people you know would like it and enjoy it, too. So consider that, please. It would be wonderful if you did. And, of course, if you're listening live, well, pop over by the chat room, headon.live. There you will be greeted by the early arrivers. That's Anatole and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, guys. And moderated by me because, well, apparently Roger in Oregon has had a power outage earlier today. And so it slowed down his schedule. He's baking bread today. That sounds lovely. Exactly, Matt. Matt says, Horn 20. We're almost old enough to drink. I won't mention what we're old enough to do. Never mind, Robin. Don't go there. But as I said, this is Friday on the front porch. And here in about an hour, we will go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday. Anyone who wants to. New voices are always welcome. And discuss the various and sundry things of the week. Hey, there's Irish Dave. Hey, Irish Dave. Any stories we may have missed? And we've probably missed a lot of them given the content of this week. It's been sort of nitwit Nero intensive. But I got to tell you, I'm really, really proud of the work that we have done together. Sorting out all the various and sundry questions that surround this monumental I'm really tired of the word unprecedented, but, well, damn, if the shoe fits, here we go. So, we'll go over there in about an hour. And, by the way, if, perchance, you don't have Skype, or if you've never reached out to me, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, one word, on Skype and become friends, well, I encourage you to do that because that means I would be able to, in the event of an emergency, not really an emergency, but that I would be able to initiate a group call if needed to. Go ahead and do that. But if you can't use Skype, at the very top of the page at headon.live, there's a button, and it says click here. That will take you into the Friday on the Front Porch group as easy as you please, okay? Love to hear from you. Love new voices. Love new ideas, new opinions, new input. And it mixes ever so well with a lot of the people you've heard over the years. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, even when I overblather the beginning of the program. And this program is no different. And so we say thank you to Paul. Thank you, Paul. And thank you to Thomas. Thanks as well to, well, no, it's Thomas and Paul. And thanks as well to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thanks for being partial sponsors of the program, this little non-commercial, non-capitalist adventure in liberal, independent, progressive broadcasting. Where to begin? Oh, the fundraising goal. The fundraising goal stands at $795. So for where we are now, that's today and yesterday, entirely unfunded. And this past Wednesday, unfunded, except for $105. So that's not that steep, a community-made miracle, $795. And hopefully we will get there. We'll see. The PayPal button is at headon.live. Okay. Now, what's that, Steve? Yes, Steve says, commemoration, given that August 6th will fall on Sunday, unless you were going to mention it on Monday, August the 7th. I would like to commemorate and recall one of the greatest war crimes that any nation has ever committed, to wit, our dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. There will be a commemoration in Hiroshima on the 6th. And the debate rolls on as to whether that was the right thing to do, and there is a lot of well, there was a lot of propaganda at the time that said, oh, this was absolutely necessary, when in fact it probably wasn't. And by the way, just as an aside, I still haven't seen Oppenheimer. Might see it this weekend. But you know what's notably absent from Oppenheimer? Any of the people the bombs were used on. And I'm not speaking solely and exclusively of the Japanese people, Japanese civilians, okay? Not the Japanese military, Japanese civilians of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But also unmentioned in the film, which is getting huge accolades, are the people of New Mexico. Fallout rained on communities days after. Radioactive fallout days after the detonation of the bomb at White Sands. Sheep were killed. Homes were damaged. And people were poisoned by radiation. Now, it's a little known fact that a number of years ago, the Congress passed, and it was signed into law, an act to compensate people affected by above-ground nuclear testing, beginning with those original tests, like the one that is depicted in Oppenheimer. The compensation was primarily directed at people who worked in and around the test site, military and civilian. But you know what the Congress did? They specifically removed from any possibility of consideration residents of New Mexico who were just ordinary, everyday citizens. And in that Compensation Act, it is not necessary to prove that you got cancer or any other disease from those test blasts, but simply that you were exposed. Unless you just happened to be one of the people who was living their lives utterly oblivious to the secret, the secret program that was operating in your backyard. Later studies of the spread of the radiation from those above ground, from that first nuclear atomic test, suggest that in a relatively short period of time, the radiation had spread to greater or lesser degree to something on the order of 46 out of what were then 48 states in 1945. And that's kind of wild to consider. I don't know what the two states were that weren't affected. Maine? Maybe Florida. But it tells us a lot about the pernicious effect of atomic and nuclear weapons. Alabama. The radiation reached Alabama. It reached Georgia. It reached Montana. Probably pretty sure it reached Canada. Damn sure reached Mexico. Oh, but those were simpler and more innocent times, weren't they? I find it difficult to support a claim such as that. But it feels like if that's the case, then there's a little bit of whitewashing going on. And as many of you know, well, first of all, there are a number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who live in New Mexico and Arizona and Texas and Colorado. And the first town in which my daughter and son-in-law and little baby grandson, whom I am still trying to figure out a way to finally see, well, the first place they lived was literally on top of the remains of a uranium mine, you know, the ore from which uranium is refined is pitch blende. And yes, Grants, New Mexico sits on top of an old pitch blende mine. So thanks for the reminder, Steve. Randy Radar points out if you drank milk, it was in the milk. Got milk? Whoo! And I don't know exactly which radioactive elements it was. Now we've got some interesting news this afternoon. First off, and you know the problem with this. Let me see here. I don't like to run audio from other programs because unless it's just a clip, that's fair. That's fair use. And give credit where credit's due. Midas Touch, and Ralph's provided this to me, Midas Touch has a video out via Ben Mycelis titled Alina Haba, that would be counsel for the parking garage, Alina Haba, 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 incriminates her own client in a very bizarre arraignment press conference. Let me see if I can scrub through this to see if they're actually going to play. Well, it looks like that looks like it might be her. Let's see if we can grab some audio. Again, this is from Ben Mycelis at Midas Touch.
Testimony, and there's a number of aides that have said that the president was made aware that he lost the election and yet continued to argue that it was stolen from him. How do you reconcile those two things?
Well, I think that everybody was made aware that he lost the election, but that doesn't mean that was the only advice he was given. As anybody understands what happens in the Oval Office, there are a numerous amount of advisors and politicians and lawyers, not just one or two, that are giving you advice and telling you what they believe is true. So he may not agree with Mike Pence. He may not agree with one of his lawyers, but that doesn't mean that there weren't other people advising him exactly the opposite. And the president has a right, as every one of us do, to listen to several opinions and make their decision.
Okay, and then Alina.
That's not exactly compelling. And, yeah, it sounds like she's confessing on behalf of her pretty horrible client.
But the special counsel says Trump could have disagreed with the results and talked about it. No crime there. The difference is what he did to try and switch the votes.
So what is it that he did to try and switch the votes that you refer to? By bringing cases? By using the law in an appropriate manner? Unlike what we're sitting here today seeing? This is not appropriate.
This is not appropriate. No, because counsel for the parking garage, that's addressed in the indictment. Have you read it? Alina, have you read it? The indictment points out that Nitwit Nero had a right to bring all those lawsuits. But when you lose all of them, that just adds to the further weight, and in this case, great weight, of evidence against burbling that the election was stolen. Those are actual findings of fact by federal tribunals, by judges who enjoy Article 3 of the Constitution lifetime tenure on the court. Those were judges from Obama, Clinton, Bush, and yes, Nitwit Nero himself. And they all said, we've seen the evidence, you lost, case literally closed. It's inappropriate.
Appropriate. What President Trump did is he said, go patriotically and peacefully and protest. That is an American right. That is why we are America and we are not a third world country. Although I will say that today, I don't feel very much like we are in America. Yes.
Oh, my. She is irate, y'all. Oh, she's all head up. Now, John Lauro, out of Tampa, and by the way, I think I pointed out that if you are charged with serious federal felonies relating to government service, there is an army of lawyers in Washington, D.C., whose bread and butter is defending people charged with serious federal felonies alleged to have occurred during the course and scope of government service. They're in Washington, D.C. Why? Because that's where those prosecutions tend to arise. And for the same reason that the best stage actors are in New York and on the West End in London. And the best screen actors are largely in Hollywood. So it says a lot that Nitwit Nero hired a criminal defense lawyer who probably has federal experience dealing with federal cases in Tampa. Anybody? Bueller? That say anything to anybody? He could not get anyone in Washington, D.C. to represent him because nobody worth their salt in Washington, D.C. is willing to represent him for a number of reasons. One, they probably won't get paid. Two, their career will be over by the time the case is, because as a general rule within the law, one does not announce that one is a specialist in any particular area of law, with the exception of maritime law and patent law. It's just the way it plays out. One can say, for instance, accepting cases in personal injury or accepting cases in divorce, adoption, and child abuse and neglect, but one does not say one is a specialist therein. But when it comes to being defended against a massive load of felonies, you want the people who know the most. And Geezer Disgustus, John Morrow ain't that. And I've got a little side bet going. It's just a fin. That at some point in time, we will see John Morrow absent himself from the proceedings. Because once again, Nitwit Nero will become unrepresentable. And if you merely listen to her words, Alina Habana Habana Habana, former counsel to the parking garage, I still get a giggle every time I say that. I'm easily entertained. She ain't either.
Just go and show.
Keep going, Alina. And I feel a little bit, because I want to be so careful here. I do not want to be sexist. I do not want to comment upon a woman's capabilities based upon her appearance. A woman has a right to dress any way that she sees fit. Had she chosen to walk out there wearing those pumps that Scary Jerry was talking about last night that you can fill with water and put little goldfish in, that is entirely her right. This is, at least not yet, Iran or any other godforsaken shithole Middle Eastern country where women are despised. And I realize I'm treading on a very fine line here. But we know what Nitwit Nero's perverted preferences are. I am not making any suggestions whatsoever about anything untoward having happened. But Marcus Aurelius is a pervert. He is a serial philanderer. He's a fornicator. He is an adulterer. He cheated on every woman he ever married. Let's see. He cheated on Ivanka with Marla. He cheated on Marla with Melanoma. He cheated on Melanoma with Stormy. And so far, that's where the story stands. He raped a woman in Bloomingdale's. There are claims that he fathered children outside wedlock. He claimed to have the right to grab a woman by her genitals, and he has a type. And I'm going to say right here and right now, and with all those caveats, I hope not to hear anything back in terms of a critique, because I have made myself abundantly clear. He chose Alina Habba for her look. And I suspect she knows it. Okay? And so she goes out, and as is the case for men and women alike who seek his approval, she goes out and speaks, no matter how many microphones are there, to an audience of one.
Bentley admits that it was his laptop from hell. The next day, DA Alvin Bragg indicts President Trump. June 8th.
Wait, Hunter Biden? What?
An FBI document is released showing that the Ukrainians paid the Biden crime family millions and millions of dollars.
Okay, now, seriously. She remains on the Trump payroll as a lawyer. Remember, MAGA, more attorneys getting attorneys. She is a lawyer on the Trump payroll. For her to repeat so that, I don't know, Tangerine Tiberius will get a half-hearted little stiffy and his withered old member will jump like a snake in a microwave by hearing his favorite phrase, Biden crime family. He can say that all day long. Actually, he kind of can't, but deal with that later. She, however, is governed by rules of professional conduct, and she cannot. That is arguably actionable conduct, actionable unethical conduct on the part of counsel in addressing the public.
Next day, the Mar-a-Lago raid and the Mar-a-Lago indictment.
Yeah. This is just a hot mess. And Alina Habana may come to regret it. Billable Rick says, John Lauro. See, I'm not the only one that thinks in these terms. Thanks for the validation, Billable. I know why Trump hired John Lauro, besides the fact that no D.C. attorney would take his case. Lauro looks good on TV, and his hair was perfect. I think he was once seen drinking pina coladas down at Trader Vic's. Couldn't resist. Sorry. But yeah, those are the standards. Bestest attorney at law, Lee in New York, says Trump always has
the bestest people. He likes acting people in charge.
My guess, Nitwit Nero is looking to hire the bestest acting lawyer.
Perry Mason.
No, Perry Mason is no longer the bestest acting lawyer. I was rather peeved when I found out that the 2 seasons worth of HBO's Perry Mason would not be renewed. Because I loved it. Great cast.
No, I want the guy that makes me look dainty and petite, you know, Raymond Buzz, Burr, whatever.
Sorry, he's dead. Why is it that every time I inhabit the mind of a Trump minion who happens to be male, my Smithers voice comes out? I don't know. But I don't think you're far from the truth. Now, Steve in New York, who worked in D.C. on Capitol Hill, I will add, the people who know the most in D.C., Steve notes, those people also expect payment for that expertise. Yeah, they do. They were paying attention on the first day of law school. And when they were told the first 3 rules of lawyering, which I, like a magician telling how a trick is done, have frequently mentioned on this program. The first 3 things they teach you in law school are get the money up front. Emilio wants to know, Alina Habana, that looks like Habana, did she go to the upstairs, oh my God, you guys, school of lawyering and life coaching? Okay. I like it when we get our first cowbell, at least within the first hour. And I'm not discounting anything. This story, however, I read this earlier from Talking Points Memo. And sometimes people decide that their only way forward is through. And that they're just going to have to brazen shit out to see the other side. Over at the Claremont Institute, the chairman of their board of directors, a man named Tom Klingenstein, interviewed John Eastman. Now, the interview took place before the indictment was released this week. So Eastman didn't have that in his hip pocket. He did not know for a fact. Because these people are listed as unindicted co-conspirators, may not even have a target letter. He didn't know that he would be an unindicted co-conspirator, I don't think. But interviewing John Eastman, Tom Klingenstein asked him about his cockamamie wackadoodle theory about the overthrow of the government of the United States and the 2020 election. He did so by hypothetical. Lawyers love hypotheticals because you don't have to live in reality world. And you can find out a lot about somebody's position by asking them hypothetically what they would do. And so Tom Klingenstein asked John Eastman if his opinions, if had he been around in 1960, would his opinions about this 1960 contest between Richard Milhouse, Pinhead Nixon, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, would his opinion have been the same as it was in 2020? Because to this day, diehard movement conservatives swear that the 1960 election was stolen from Dick Nixon. Illinois. Eastman, with hardly batting an eyelash, said, well, no. Because in 2020, it was, and this is a quote, an existential threat to the very survivability, not just of our nation, but of the example that our nation, properly understood, provides to the world. And in support of that assertion, he cited the Constitution. No. He cited that little propaganda pamphlet from July the 4th, 1776, which has precisely zero force of law in the United States. And understand, this is supposed to be a highfalutin intellectual lawyer.
There's actually a provision in the Declaration of Independence that a people will suffer abuses while they remain sufferable, tolerable while they remain tolerable. At some point, abuses become so intolerable that it becomes not only their right, but their duty to alter or abolish the existing government. So that's the question. Have the abuses or the threat of abuses become so intolerable that we have to be willing to push back?
This is the fantasy world that the maggots live in. What was intolerable to them was the idea that their orange-stained God Emperor, a waddling adipose sack of sin and petty grievances, insecurities, lies, and some sort of pain, hurt people, you know, wouldn't be president anymore. That was what was intolerable, that power would peacefully be transferred. Aceman, remember, is co-conspirator number two. We still don't know who co-conspirator number six is, so I'm still crossing my dainty little fingers in hopes that it is Jenny Thomas. And what Eastman wanted to stop was what he called the modern left wing. It was a multi-part interview, the first part released in June, according to TPM, goes over the ground that Eastman still thinks the November 2020 election was stolen. Part two is all about the legal remedy. And then in part three, Klingenstein asks, should you and the president have pursued that legal remedy? And he said, well, you know, I was misquoted and mischaracterized and taken out of context. Right-wingers always complain they've been taken out of context, even if you give all the context. And context to the context, and the context to the context on the context. But of all the cockamamie wackadoodle claims that John Eastman made in that interview, he said that Nitwit Nero actually, no kidding, read a bunch of academic law review articles about the Electoral Count Act so that he could be fully conversant with the law. Oh, my aching back. He has the attention span of a moth on meth. Light? Is there a light? I see a light. That's a light. Is that a light? No, there's a light. Oh, wait, that's the same light. I flew in from a different direction. Where am I? But all of that horseshit about the threat from the modern left, it's all dog whistles. Racist dog whistles, because the white wing, the maggots, are in fact racist. But you know that. And, of course, he's one of those asshats who gets a giant sad over OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. He fulminated to Tom Klingenstein about the left wanting to completely repudiate every one of our founding principles. You know, founding principles like black people being three-fifths of a human being, women not having the right to vote, and white people having the right to genocide indigenous people. There's an attack on everything from sexual and gender norms to gas stoves. Even OSHA telling me what kind of chair I can have in my home office. I'm tempted to say that this guy is not in touch with reality, but I'm not going to give him that. Because that would suggest that some sort of deleterious mental process is at work. He's not. He's just a dirty little fascist. What's interesting, as TPM continues, is that in the third interview, Eastman decides to abandon the voter fraud claim and instead go for the deep state theory that federal government agencies tried to make sure that the 2020 election, the real results, didn't come out, and that they're going to do the same in 2024. And then he barked and grunted about the Twitter files in which Matt Taibbi allowed himself to be leveraged as a useful idiot. And then, of course, Hunter Biden's laptop!
And if those are the stakes, what are you supposed to do? Sit around and twiddle your thumbs?
I've become absolutely fascinated with the little polls that take place at the bottom of these stories. To what extent do you agree or disagree with John Eastman's assertion that the stakes were such that overthrowing the government was a legitimate means to stop what he described as the modern left wing? I clicked the box that said, strongly disagree. It had 58% agreement. Strongly disagree got 58% of the vote. No one said somewhat agree, no one said somewhat disagree, and no one said other, no opinion. But 42% of respondents said strongly agree. Now, if that's the margin in 2024, if that's Biden versus Trump, we're good. But it's also a higher than I would like to consider idea, and this is an unscientific poll, of what some Americans think is the modern left. I mean, the people who said strongly agree on that don't even know what the left is. I mentioned having watched The Death of Stalin. Dark, brilliant comedy. But no one is running around and putting Republicans up against a wall. On the other hand, however, I might note that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis has gone down a road like that. Monkey Up, trying to salvage his flagging numbers, and oh my heavenly days, you want to hear something funny? Joy in Ann Arbor finds the best screenshots and memes from a guy named Ed Bermila, B-U-R-M-I-L-A, over on Blue Sky, which I have not gotten on yet. I don't even know if I know how to drive that. But this little bit of truth, following the story, and it's in my stack if we can get to it. You recall when Monkey Up's education department declared that there would be no teaching of black history in Florida in the AP classes? Well, Monkey Up's Department of Fascist Education has also said Florida school students cannot take advanced placement psychology courses. Because the approved curriculum for advanced placement psychology teaches about different sexualities and different genders. And teaches about transgender people, cisgender people, non-binary people, homosexual men, bisexual people, lesbian women, etc. Well, Ed Bermila said, and this is the best distillation of the Monkey Up philosophy I have yet seen. Every time DeSantis sees another poll where he's down 40, he's going to twist a dial labeled pointless cruelty and turn to look at the studio audience like, hey, what about this? For the next 12 months, until he finally gets the hint and commits seppuku live on Rumble from a Beef O'Brady's in Ocala. God, that's good. And so we have this. Monkey Up DeClantis declared in front of hot mics that when I am president, I'm going to start slitting throats in the federal government on the first day. In his fevered fantasy, that would be January the 20th, 2025. Tony Reardon, the president of the National Treasury Employees Union, said that Monkey Up's comments were repulsive and unworthy of the presidential campaign trail. Come on, Tom. You can say he's a dirty little fascist. It's all right. Then the AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, Everett Kelly, declared, Governor DeSantis' threat to start slitting throats of federal employees is dangerous, disgusting, disgraceful, and disqualifying. Collins Max Boot called him deranged. And Bill the Bloody Crystal, who once got everything wrong and continued to get paid, said Monkey Up is making a bold play to dominate the maniacal psychopath lane in the Republican primary. And at present, he trails Julius Geiser by at least 30 points. All of this took place, the throat slitting, in New Hampshire. On bureaucracy, you know, we're going to have all these deep state people, you know. We're going to start slitting throats on day one and be ready to go. You're going to see a huge, huge outcry because Washington wants to protect its own. So he desperately wants to be liked by the mean kids. And it's not the first time he's talked about wanting to slit people's throats. No, he said it to a wingnut, ink-stained wretch by the name of John Solomon. He said he wanted a defense secretary who would slit some throats and be very firm, very strong. Thing is, though, Monkey Up doesn't really know who he's talking about, because over at the Federal Government Employees Union, the president there, the aforementioned Kelly, said federal employees, a third of whom are veterans now wearing their second uniform in service to their country, have dedicated their lives to serving their fellow Americans. They support our military, provide health care to our nation's veterans, enforce our laws, safeguard our communities, deliver benefits to America's most vulnerable citizens, keep our skies safe for air travel, protect human health and our environment, and much more. These public servants deserve respect and commendation from our nation's leaders. No federal employee should face death threats from anyone, least of all someone seeking to lead the U.S. government. Governor DeSantis must retract his irresponsible statement. Well, he ain't gonna. He'll double down, just like that meme said.
Would you care to retract your statement about slitting government employee throats, sir?
No! In fact, I'll tell you now that once I've slit their throats, I'm going to suck the blood from their pulsing carotid arteries. Does that sound like a retraction to you?
Subject line, Trump Biden, John in Central PA says, the idea that Ron DeSantis is more dangerous than Trump is nonsense. Nobody likes him. He would be their Al Gore or Hillary or even Goldwater. Trump is a much larger threat. Trump is out of control in every way imaginable. Trump is a threat because he is still wildly popular amongst his base. DeSantis simply is not. DeSantis is an absolute hot mess. He can't campaign anywhere except Florida. and even that area is shrinking. And I'm not just talking about sea level rise. You're largely correct, John, I think. However, if Nitwit Nero is not the nominee, whomever fills that vacuum will be a sufficient vehicle for the id-driven, violent fantasies and realities of the maggots. The maggots are the threats. And if they can't have Trump, they'll take somebody else. I mean, not Krispy Kreme. Not Asa Hutchinson. But, well, if it has to be Nimrata Haley, our first woman president. But I think she'll flat-foot it, too. But he's just out there loitering around in the 1% weeds. Senator Tim Scott. And he can put a nice benign face on. And, well, Tim's a black Republican, so he's more than prepared to be called just about anything necessary in order to secure power, for God's sakes. He's been living with that in South Carolina, Stan, for, what, 2 terms now? Right? Oh, how about that? Hey, Claire. I got a note from across the pond from Claire relative to my mention of Hiroshima and Oppenheimer. Okay, so this is just my opinion, not a review of the film Oppenheimer. Okay, so I admit I binged on the BAFTA-winning BBC and part series, which originally aired in 1980. Eight part? Is that what's the ampersand? 7 part. The series was also called Oppenheimer. Well, of course it was. It was nominated for 7 awards and won 7. It also received 2 Emmy nominations and earned Sam Waterston a Golden Globe nomination for Best Performance by an Actor in a Miniseries or Motion Picture Made for TV. It also received 2 Emmy nominations and earned Sam Waterston a Golden Globe nomination for Best Performance by an Actor in a Miniseries or Motion Picture Made for TV. Yeah, by the way, did you just say that Hollywood has had greater screen actors than the European British film industry? You didn't, though, did you? Because that's a pure subjective statement, and of course not even remotely true, so I must have heard wrong. Not feeling too good tonight. Off to bed soon. Oh, Claire, I'm sorry. I thought I had covered my bases by mentioning stage actors in the West End. Anyway, I watched all 7 episodes on BBC iPlayer one rainy day, which were all days apart from one recently. I know those spells. And I've never been so riveted on my sofa and so fully engaged by such a long series. Didn't even notice the thunder outside until it was right overhead. The day after watching the series, I took in John H. Elsa's documentary, The Day After Trinity, which was also great. So here I was, primed and ready to be impressed by the newly released Oppenheimer at my lovely little local cinema. I brought food and water and a small cushion. Now, I have never left a film before it finished in all my life. I am 73 years of age. I left the cinema 2 hours in. Not crap, but not worth the hype, nor my ticket. Much love. Off to bed now. Sweet dreams, Claire. Okay, so forewarned is forearmed. Maybe Maybe I'm glad I saw Barbie when I went to the movies and didn't go to see Oppenheimer. I just wasn't in an Oppenheimer mood that night. Besides, I was wearing pink. That would have been out of place in Oppenheimer. Thank you for that. Maybe it's time to wait till it comes out on some streaming service. If the nominee is not Trump, Lee in New York says, MAGA enthusiasm will turn into sulking. Good news for Democrats. Are you sure? Because, for instance, Monkey Up will do everything in his power to leverage it, and they don't like Monkey Up right now. But again, nature abhors a vacuum, and he's the nastiest human being who isn't Trump currently running for the Republican nomination for President of the United States of America. And by the way, just something that happened today. Nitwit Nero has entered a not guilty plea to the superseding indictment in the documents case. And here we are at the top of the hour. And so it's time that we go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree, and wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table. But since we've been on Monkey Up Duplantis, let's go ahead and deal with one more little story. Monkey Up, according to Mediaite, well, in Iowa, campaigning there, spoken to by a reporter about Nitwit Nero's claims of election fraud. And remember, John Eastman abandoned those claims in that interview with the Claremont Institute. Well, via the New York Times, Nicholas Nahamas and Lisa Lehrer quote Monkey Up as saying, in regard to Monkey Up speaking to the reporter about election fraud, all those theories that were put out did not prove to be true. On the other hand, well, this time through, having previously tried to walk a very thin tightrope, Monkey Up this time said, it was not an election that was conducted the way I think that we want to. I'm curious. The Trump administration itself, and this is referenced in the indictment, said that it was the cleanest election in the history of the United States of America. That was an organization headed by an individual who was nominated by Nitwit Nero. Yeah, it was not an election that was conducted the way I think that we want to, but that's different than saying Maduro stole votes or something like that. Those theories, you know, proved to be unsubstantiated. Yeah. I agree, John, in Central PA. He's not good. So there's that. Let me put a message into the chat. Oh, by the way, via Brother Deacon Asa, based on what we were talking about with the clip last night from My Filthy Morning Habit. Brother Deacon Asa says, hey, if you're listening to the podcast and you're a member of the Morning Joe crew, leave a damn comment. And by crew, Brother Deacon Asa doesn't mean people who watch Morning Joe. He means, I mean, say hi, Joe. Say hi, Miko. The IQ of the show went up today. One of my favorite commenters, and I hadn't seen him in quite some time, showed up. Anand Giridharadas. Guy is freaking smart. And Joe and Mika both showed up to work on Friday. So we'll get the Friday on the Front Porch gang together in short order, one hopes. Thanks, Roger. Roger's done starting his bread. Well, no, the bread's done. It's out of the oven. Roger said, I'm standing by to try not to screw up tonight. You didn't screw up, Roger. Okay. Let's check in with Roger. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Doing fine.
Okay, you don't get to tease us with fresh baked bread and not tell us all about it.
Well, it's sourdough, and I started at least 24 hours to get my sourdough starter for my two cups and all that good stuff, and then I did the first rise last night and put it in the fridge overnight because it helps develop the flavor.
Sure.
And at 7 o'clock this morning, I heard a loud bang in my earplugs that I have in my ear when I listen to the radio all night. Went dead.
Huh?
So, oh, power's out. So, anyhow, I brought the bread out and set it outside because, you know, to a little warm up a little bit. Pretty soon, the E-Web, the local utility company, parks in my yard and starts looking up at some poles and rest of the kind of stuff. So I go out and talk to him, and he tells me which transformer blew and how he could put us back on. And we might lose a little bit when they fully replace the transformer behind the house, blah, 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 blah. And I think everything's fat and happy because the power comes back on. And so I make the loaves and put them in the baguette pans to do the baking and do the rise, and all of a sudden the power goes out again because they shut it off at our house to fix the pole behind us. In essence, what they had to do is the line goes down my property line to the pole that has the transformer in the back, which is the one that went, but they had to shut off the power one transformer earlier kind of thing. And so we got shut off just to make it safer for them to work. And I'm sitting there, and it got a lot more time in its second rise, but then the power came back on. You got to heat the oven up for a good 30 minutes before you put the bread in. And anyhow, that delayed me into the start of the show of having it in the oven and baking. But it's all out and good. Now I've got two more baguettes that'll last me another week or two.
Nice. Roger, are you a pancake guy?
Not anymore, realistically. When we go on a camping trip or something, I'll do pancakes.
Because if you've ever got, and I know what you're talking about with the two-stage process and everything. If you've ever got some starter left over, making sourdough pancakes is the most heavenly pancake on earth. Buckwheat or no buckwheat? Yeah.
I've got 2-pint jars of extra sourdough in the freezer, waiting for our next camping trip.
Ah, that's nice. But that's nice.
I'll take that extra starter from a previous fiasco and take that on the camping trip and then just crack in, I don't know, for the six of us. Four eggs, a little bit more flour, a little bit of milk, and make a thin dough and put it on a griddle.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Some good butter, some nice maple syrup. Or, you know.
We tend to use honey.
Huh?
Or some of my fruit syrups.
Oh, the fruit syrups would be heavenly.
No, I've been on a... I was talking with Steve from Georgistan about it earlier. A couple of months ago, I realized that my 60th reunion was coming up and I couldn't fit into the clothes that I've worn to every reunion since the 10th. So I've been going on a weight loss.
Yeah, number. We've talked about that.
And my goal is 165 and I'm hung up at 166 and I can't seem to crack that 166 to get down. So the baguette is the baking is part of that. You know, I have two small pieces of baguette for my breakfast with some butter on it to give me a little bit of grease to absorb my vitamin D pill. And eat a lot of grapes and a lot of cherries because fruit's in season. Anyhow, I've gone from 190 to 166, so I think I've done pretty well in a couple of months.
Yeah, that's great.
And, my goal was 165, but my pants feel a little tight, so I think I'm going to reset my goal to 160 for the final and try and stay there.
Well,
not easy, but it happens.
Well, but hey, cowbell for determination and sticking with it.
So, anyhow, I'm getting real tired of. I watch a lot of MSNBC.
Yeah.
And it's like there's not a goddamn thing that's happened in the entire planet.
I know.
Then Trump. I mean, what about the hottest July in recorded history?
What about the fact that it's the dead of winter in the southern hemisphere and Chile, an area of Chile, reported 102 degrees today.
I haven't
Fahrenheit.
Caught that. But
yeah, that's a real thing.
Yeah, I saw a thing on Facebook of tourists are flocking to Death Valley to expose themselves briefly to the hottest place on the planet, standing in front of the thermometer at the visitor center with the temperature reading 134 degrees. Now, where are those news stories? Come on, folks. We know the orange
shit
idiot.
Stand.
And then they talk about, well, he's been indicted in three different jurisdictions, but they leave out the fact that it's 78 felony counts.
And
Come
I'm
on,
sorry,
folks.
This is my little pet peeve. I have yet to hear anybody say Klan Act. I want to hear somebody say Klan Act. Joe, Mika, Monday, tell Lemire, say Klan Act.
MSNBC used the term Klan Act.
Pardon?
MSNBC has said the Klan Act.
Well, thank God.
But not pushed it. I mean, it was just kind of in a discussion thing they were doing.
I think there should be a memo that says all first references to the DC case should say he's charged with violations of A, B, C, and the Klan Act.
Yeah. Many people have heard me talk about this maggot friend from elementary school.
Right.
Well, next weekend? No, weekend after next. The 15th, 16th, 17th, that weekend, whatever the dates are there. is my high school reunion, and she's one of the organizers. So we will be face-to-face for the first time in 5 years.
Oh, dear.
So it should be interesting. I think I'm going to look at her and say, you know, how does it feel to support a rapist? Because he has now been found.
You're just going to jump out of the blocks with that one?
No, I'm going to wait for her to say something to me or a few other the maggots in the group.
Yeah, parry and riposte before you go in to corkscrew in for the kill.
Yeah, but I mean, somebody's going to come up to me at this reunion and jump on me for being woke. And I'm going to come in with both barrels when it happens. Just both barrels. I mean, my God, you support the idea of kicking somebody back into the water for merely doing something that is legal in requesting asylum. You're in favor of that. But when somebody has been charged with 78 felonies, you want to give him a pass? What the fuck is wrong with you? I mean, you claim to be for law and order. And I caught a really good one today that these indictments that Trump's under for January 6th isn't an example of how he's being persecuted by our justice system. It's proof of how our justice system works. In most societies, when you lead a failed coup, the results are not a trial under a set of rules and regulations of the country. It's usually end of a rope or in front of a firing squad with no due process of law. So to claim that you're being railroaded is utter ludicrous. You're being granted the values of the country that you attempted to overthrow. I mean, it's all in how you frame the argument. But for him and his cohorts to be screaming about denying him free speech, he's not being charged every time he gets up and says lies, because it's a freedom to lie. He's being charged for activity.
Yes, but Hunter Biden.
Oh, Steve.
Mm. Yes, but fine. Come up with some facts that can be taken before a grand jury and get 12 of your citizen equals.
And it's not even 12. In a grand jury, it's about 50 jurors.
Yeah, 36, okay. I think.
Depends on the state, but yeah.
I don't care. Yeah,
and it only has to be a majority.
And bring it up, and when those people agree that, and brings it before a judge, and a judge says, okay, fine. We'll bring the charges and hear the evidence in a court of law. But for Hunter Biden to be tried on the media for innuendo that cannot be presented in a court of law is ludicrous.
Roger, can I be a little bit facetious here?
Go for it. What the
hell?
Do you
honestly think that any of that matters to those people?
Of course not. They are not patriotic Americans.
I actually saw a guy, I couldn't believe it, right along the lines with how cultish they are, say he would give Trump his mortgage payment if he had to.
Fine, he can join the other homeless on the streets.
Are there no more workhouses?
But when you're at that level, the only way to talk to these people is to go,
sold American.
Sold an American.
Yeah, okay. Squeaky, is this your first cowbell?
Maybe.
By the way, I need to say again, I thought Rick was fucking on point last night. I thought Rick was fantastic last night.
Oh, speaking of which, through Pacer, any word on his bond conditions?
I haven't checked, but I can if you want me to. Where is it? Where is it? It's in the D.C. District of D.C.?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can check. Give me some minutes.
Well, with his access to an airplane that has international capabilities, even surrendering a passport is not sufficient to limit his travel. I think he should be put on an ankle monitor and house arrest.
Yeah, but you can't do that, Roger.
Why not?
Because he is running for president.
He is an individual citizen. And I had a friend who got caught up in a drug bust number, and the feds were playing heavy-handed. He had already been arraigned in the federal court in Eureka, California. And then he got summoned to Montana. And he went up to Montana, and the judge in Montana basically looked at him and said, what the hell are you doing here? You've already been arraigned in Eureka, California. There's no reason for you to be up here. And he said, thank you, Your Honor, but I showed up because I didn't want to get in trouble. And he was on an ankle monitor at his house awaiting trial. And he didn't have PG&E because when he got busted for his crow room, the PG&E shut him off and he couldn't get the PG&E turned back on. And anyhow, he borrowed a little 400-watt inverter from me to hook up to a car battery so that he could keep the Wi-Fi type connection from his ankle monitor to the state house, wherever the hell it was, and he was on home confinement awaiting the disposition of his case. And the other side of it is he could, by telephone, request an hour to go to the grocery store or, things of that sort. Trump could be on a tight leash via an ankle monitor, and he could still be campaigning, but they'd be tracking his movements. And if he got on a plane from Miami and that plane headed out over the Atlantic, he could be intercepted and the pilot would take the discretion as the better part of valor and return that plane to the airspace because he was violating the terms of his bond, whatever you want to, I don't know the legal terms for it, but that plane was going off course. It wasn't going up to Bedminster. It wasn't going to Kansas City. It was headed somewhere else, and therefore that plane has to come back. I think he should be put on a tight leash. And that allow him to go campaign. Fine. That's his freedom of speech kind of bullshit.
All right, Roger. But, Roger, okay. I have a very simple and practical question. Do you want him convicted?
Yes.
Then don't complicate it with things like that that are not entirely necessary. Because, and I think Steve will agree with me, and if Billable Rick is out there, he will too. You do not, your goal in prosecuting a case is to avoid error or to avoid providing the tribunal the opportunity to commit error to the extent that you humanly possibly can. Because even if it is non-dispositive to the ultimate outcome. An allegation of error, any error, runs the risk of opening an appellate door. Now, this, one way or the other, is going to go to the Supreme Court, okay? And depending on the outcome, it could come from either side. But it would open the door to claims that that the court had an inherent bias against the defendant, and that via an abuse of discretion relative to the conditions of bond, displayed that bias, and then that bias continued throughout the trial and thereby invalidated the verdict that you, I, and millions upon millions of Americans who love this country and want to preserve this republic desperately desire.
Yeah, I guess it also, it makes sense, and it also eliminates one more thing to use a delay tactic. In other words, if those conditions were put on him, then those conditions could be argued, which would delay the start of the trial, da-da-da-da-da.
Maybe, possibly. I don't know that... I would need to hear from Steve or Rick as to whether that qualifies for an interlocutory appeal.
Well, all I'm getting at is that Trump's modus operandi is historically throw up as much stuff on the wall as you can and argue about that.
Well, I have a story here exactly on point to that, and it also goes to something that Steve has said in the past. That he has a theory, or he is engaging in a theory called flood the zone. It's a football analogy because we can't go even in issues that speak to the existential crisis of the republic of our age. We can't resist a football analogy. But flood the zone. Steve, take this. Flood the zone. Explain.
Sorry about that. I had it on mute. If you're drinking from a hose, somebody turns it up full bore so you can't actually drink the water. They're putting so much out there that you don't really know what to deal with. That's been one of my defenses of Merrick Garland, is that there's just so much that you simply don't have the resources to address everything.
Right, and to get all biblical, you have to separate the wheat from the chaff. But within that football analogy, flood the zone is when you know that the defense is playing a zone defense and not man coverage, that you send so many receivers into the zone coverage that the zone coverage, which by definition is not man on man, is bound to fail. And you're gonna, and somebody, you'll check off receiver one, receiver two, receiver three, somebody's gonna get open. And so flood the zone in this case means we're going to fling everything out there and hope that something slips through. I mean, that's what all these maggot states are doing with all these bigoted laws. They're assuming that the opposition, whether it be the federal government, the ACLU, Lambda Legal, it matters not, that they just can't defend against all of them. That they'll use up all their money Now, in that case, it's not necessarily such a smart strategy, because if these states wind up getting their asses handed to them, not only have they had to pay their lawyers, they get to pay the ACLU's too, and the ACLU adds to their coffers and is ready for the next wave. Have I got it right?
Yes.
Thank you. Because
yeah, that sounds right, Robin.
Hey, Christopher.
By the way, happy Friday, everybody.
Yeah, by the way, I'm trying to. I'm not a criminal person, so I'm some of the stuff.
We know you're not. What you're saying is you're not a criminal defense lawyer.
Yeah.
But as a woman, I need to be validated by men when I come up with ideas like that. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Steven Crowder would be proud of you, Rob.
Thank you, Christopher. Thank you. Thank you for the validation.
He would validate
mister.
You. You're valid. Yeah.
Stop it, Billable Rick. Flood the zone. Billable Rick says, how does flood the zone strategy relate to the Chewbacca defense? Don't make sense.
Don't make sense.
Well, the Chewbacca defense is an element of flooding the zone. Yeah, see, you thought you were going to flummox me.
Yeah.
Dippy Blonde Lady can't handle that one. Chewbacca. Huh?
The only thing I can find on here as it regards his bond, it says bond status of defendant, defendant remain on personal recognizance. I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but that's all I find on here.
Okay, maybe I don't understand the federal system. PR is what you're granted, but there's a dollar. I'm not bitching at you, Steve. There's a dollar amount to the bond, and then the bond, and then the defendant is released on their personal recognizance. But there has to be an amount to have to pay if they don't show up.
I don't see that. What I'm looking at on PACER is all the various deadlines and hearings and little notes about the case, and that's the only thing I see on there that even references bond.
Wow.
And by the way, this is not going to make me very popular, but I don't think anybody should be held with a ankle bracelet or in any kind of confinement. I think the presumption should be on bail granted, or not even bail. You shouldn't have to pay bail to be released. I don't care who you are. And, you know, there are exceptions, but I think as a general matter, nobody should be held before conviction.
Really?
So I'm a little bit of a...
Is this... But now, hold on. Maybe I'm wrong. But this is kind of like you and I being at odds over your free speech absolutism, whereas...
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
A serial killer is caught.
Now, wait a second. Remember what I said?
There are exceptions. Okay.
Yes. And by the way, one of the reasons I'm at odds over that is because of how, and I know Canada and the UK, and that's the reason I know those is because obviously Leo's in Canada, and two, because I can speak some German, but I don't know enough to know the ins and outs of the basic law. Basic law is what they call their constitution. But the notion that in Canada, the parliament or any provincial government can suspend their Bill of Rights for up to 5 years. That has authoritarianism built right into the system. And the notion that during all the stuff with the Troubles in Northern Ireland and with what was going on with Northern Ireland and the Republic having their the issues that Thatcher could prohibit anybody from Sinn Féin even discussing issues of independence on TV, I have a serious problem with that. I have a serious problem with there is no – that the standard for slander and libel and slander in the UK is the same no matter who it is. And that you can actually be – if you call somebody a criminal – If you were to say call Trump a criminal, under UK law he could sue you for defamation right now.
Mm.
And in addition, what Thatcher did when Arafat was head of the PLO, they actually prohibited him from speaking on the BBC. The only way the Palestinians could get their message out is that they had to pick somebody who wasn't Arafat to go on there and articulate the Palestinian viewpoint. Those are the reasons that – I mean, and even in Canada, you can be sued for libel even if what you say is true or slander or libel even if what you say is true. There are people whom companies have sued and won when they put reviews on Yelp that were either true or were nothing but expressing an opinion. I didn't like the food because it tasted like garbage or shit or it tasted burnt. Companies have sued the people who said that or wrote that and sued Yelp and won. Whether it's
okay, I'm not taking issue with any of that, Steve. Let me add, however, that libel per se and slander per se are things, civil actions in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And an allegation in many jurisdictions, an allegation of criminality is libel per se.
But you're still going to be subject to New York Times versus Sullivan.
Not if you're not a public figure.
No, but what I'm saying is a public figure could say that about a private person, or a private person could say that about a public figure in the UK. And
right, and it doesn't matter. And I've actually via Flavio, I've got a story here that validates your position. Unsurprisingly, it comes from the fascist shithole that Italy is rapidly becoming.
Oh, my mom sent me an email the other day telling me how much she likes Maloney. Thanks, Mom.
Well, oddly enough, this is a case about Giorgia Meloni, the fascist prime minister of Italy.
Right. And, I just want to be
hold, hold on.
Folks.
You want to know the story?
No, just wait real quick. This is not me being contrarian because I'm being pedantic or just want to be the cock knocker at the picnic. That's not what this is. And this is not – this is total good faith, extremely intelligent people bantering about this. I just want people to understand I'm not just being contrarian here.
I understand. So there is a band I have never heard of because I'm an old. But there is a the singer for a band named Placebo. The singer's name is Brian Molko. And Giorgia Meloni, under the incredibly lax laws of the Italian fascist state, is suing Brian Molko because while the band was playing at the Sonic Park Festival in Stupinci, in Torino, back last month, Brian Molko said, "Giorgia Meloni, piece of shit, fascist, racist," and yelled it in Italian. And so prosecutors have opened a criminal case against him for insulting the state institutions. Yeah. And via this article from The Guardian, I found out that Italy has among the highest rates of libel suits against media in the entire EU. And meanwhile, another guy, Roberto Saviano, author of a book called Gomorrah, is looking at a trial because he opined about her, a fascist opinion about immigration. And if he's convicted, he's looking at 3 years hard time in a fascist Italian prison. The criminal code says anyone who publicly defames the Republic, and includes government, parliament, the courts, the army, is to be fined somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 euros and up to 3 years in the joint. This is terrifying. And, you know, along the way, remember, Mussolini's granddaughter is a fascist, and she has objected to that characterization, even though she says she's a fascist. Giorgia Meloni objects to being called a fascist, even though she herself says she's a fascist. I guess she's objecting to being called a racist and a piece of shit, but I think racist is what American law would refer to as a condition precedent to fascist.
Well, and you know what?
I guess it's the piece of shit part that's under poor George's skin.
But I don't think Meloni has said she's a fascist. She has just expressed her admiration for Mussolini. Which, you know, it's like, I like Hitler, but I'm not a fascist. It's like kind of one of those things, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, oh, wait. I think we've got a name for that, Steve, and it's right in your wheelhouse. It's the Marge Schott defense. Am I wrong?
That's your girl, Steve.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, what a nutball, but she did right by the Reds, but anyway.
I thought she stiffed them on their World Series rings.
That could very well be. Okay, she did right by the fans.
She made the trains run on time.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
Cowbell, you get a cowbell for that one. That was really good.
What was it that Roy Cohn said? He said he's absolutely not a homosexual. He
just likes to have sex with men. Yes.
Yes, right. He said, I am not gay, but I like
I'm not gay. Man. Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Did anyone see him?
And at the risk of making everybody turn off the program, that's like a little something I've been seeing lately. And I particularly hope I won't piss off any of my sisters here. I've been seeing this reactionary, almost cultish behavior within my community of people who say, I'm not transgender. I'm a true transsexual. I have a medical condition that requires medication. I had to have surgery. And then they turn and then they become, you know, with all due apologies, it's kind of like Karen's, with all due apologies to women named Heather. They're a bunch of Heathers, for anybody who's ever seen Mean Girls, okay? I'm one of the good ones. They won't put me in the camps.
Yeah, it's a thing out there in the world. I had a quick question for Roger. Roger, you still there? Is that mute?
Yeah, I'm muted, but go.
Well, I was just going to say, so when you go to your reunion with your maggot, brain-riddled classmate, first of all, has she posted anything about RFK Jr.?
Not that I've seen.
Now wait on. Hold on. No, there are standards. We have standards on this program, Christopher.
Uh-huh.
We do not say RFK because RFK was a good man.
Oh, okay. Rotten FK,
This is rotted FK.
Rotted FK. Okay. Well, when you start getting into that, after your niceties and, you know, exchanging of recipes and canning principles and what have you, when you start going down the dark path with her, and she starts talking, you know, brugga and about the vaccine and Trump could do no wrong, blah, blah, blah. Just to ask her real quick what flight she's taken to get to the Hale-Bopp Comet.
And does she have her Converse?
Exactly.
Unfortunately, I think her, the gray matter within her skull has diminished to the point where subtle comments like that would be of no avail.
So I'm picturing like that, the song in the, from the Wall, Hey You, and there's that image, and the worms ate into her brain, and that's kind of where we're at with her.
She and a bunch of her cohorts put up some of the strangest stuff that leaves me totally unable to comment on it because it is just so stupid.
Sounds like it. Good luck.
Ignorance can be cured with education, but stupidity is terminal.
Yeah.
Put succinctly, you can't fix stupid.
Yeah.
They get to vote, but they still get to vote.
Oh, yeah. And
they vote more than we do. That's the problem. The greater numbers.
Speaking of voting, there was a thing that came across my feed the other day about some state that is not wanting to allow people that don't have a permanent address to register to vote. And I went through this when I was registering voters down in California, that you cannot register to vote with a post office box as your residence in California. However, on the voter registration form, you can have a mailing address, which is a post office box, but you must put down where you actually live. Now, underneath the 11th Street overpass is a valid residence into a particular school district. If you are living under the 299 overpass, that puts you in a different school district. But your post office box could be Post Office Box 35, Arcata, California. And all your literature and ballots will be sent to that post office box. But they do require that physically where you reside the majority of the time be on your voter registration, so they know what precinct to put you in, for what bond issue to put you in, for what development that's going in the area that you need to be notified of for a public hearing. And I find California to be very enlightened when it comes to things of that sort. And Alabama, et cetera, very troglodyte. But anyhow, I mean, I'll just play it by ear when I'm in California and probably piss everybody off, including my wife. But, you know, that's my life. I live with it. Been doing it for 70 years, so why quit now?
Hey, Roger, try this on for size. If this friend says something to you, say, you know what, we'll just have to agree to disagree and offer her a bottle of Flavor Aid and see if she gets the joke.
I just had a note from Jessica up in the greater Rochester, Minnesota metropolitan co-prosperity sphere. Yes, yesterday I had my contribution to Trump talk. Yesterday I had a Trump MAGA supporter try to convince me that Trump is a loudmouth but would be an asset in the White House again. Uh-huh. Odds of me voting for Trump, less than infinitesimal. And I shall shed not a tear if when he's convicted or should some unfortunate circumstance befall him. Amen, Jessica. Amen. Let's see. I'm screwing up. We came into the program with a $795 fundraising goal after a brutal end of July that y'all fixed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But we are 2 and 2/3 days unfunded. It's Friday on the front porch. and we're at $7.95. Anything that brings that down is wonderful, fantastic, grand, joyful.
Robin, put me down for 15.
Christopher, thank you. You get us started. I appreciate you so very much. I do. I appreciate you. Thanks, because it's just such a it's just such a thing to sit and talk about, and you know, then when it crawls up around $2,500, I'm in full on panic mode and wondering what's getting turned off. Fingers crossed. Thank you, Christopher. I had an internet. You know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. I'm never going to stop saying that. Billable Rick, more on Trump's arraignment. Here's a docket entry of yesterday in Trump's indictment for the January 6th coup from the copy editing department, Billable. You might want to take a look at your original draft there. 8-3-23, minute entry for proceedings held before Magistrate Judge Mozilla A. Upadhyaya, return on summons, initial appearance, arraignment as to counts 1, 2, 3, 4, held on 8-3-23, plea of not guilty entered as to all counts. The court advised the government of its due process obligation under Rule 5F, status conference set for 8-28-23, 10 a.m. in Courtroom 9, in person before Judge Tanya S. Chutkan. Bond status of defendant, defendant remain on personal recognizance. Court reporter Jeff Hook, defense attorney John Lauro, and Todd Blanche! U.S. Attorney Thomas Windham and Molly Gaston, pretrial officer Takesha Robinson, entered 8-4-2023. As Steve mentioned, and as this entry indicates, Trump is free on his personal recognizance, and there don't appear to be any written conditions of his pretrial release. Very unusual and strange to me, says Billable, who has more than his... I don't know if it's more than, but he's got a shit ton of federal trial experience. Today's docket sheet also reflects that two new attorneys have joined the Trump dream team and filed applications to appear in the case, pro hoc vicee. That's Latin for they ain't from around here, as they haven't been admitted to the DDC court, who have also been sponsored by John Lauro. Todd Blanche, admitted to Southern District of New York and Eastern District of New York, and Filza I. Pavilon, admitted in Illinois and Florida, federal courts, and an associate at John Lauro's firm.
Now, that is missing something that I caught where apparently the magistrate judge cautioned Trump regarding interfering with witnesses or attempting to taint the jury pool.
There was a taste of a slapdown, and the magistrate judge was within his right to do so.
And, but that apparently is not a condition of the bond.
No.
From what you just read that came from Rick. And yet various people reported that he was cautioned about tampering with witnesses.
Well, this article from The Guardian's David Smith suggests that yesterday Julius Geezer was meek, shrunken, stripped of bravado and any sense of control when he entered the room, and Magistrate Judge Upadhyaya made him wait by showing up 15 minutes late and then called him appropriately Mr. Trump rather than President Trump. And at The Guardian, David Smith wrote, "It was a humbling worthy of Shakespeare's Richard II, handing his crown to Bolingbroke. My crown I am, but still my griefs are mine. You may my glories and my state depose, but not my griefs. Still am I king of those." Oh, and my favorite line from Richard II. And maybe it's applicable here. "Now let us sit on the ground and tell sad tales of the deaths of kings." Smith went on and said, dethroned, Trump was forced to undergo the same legal rituals as any other defendant. When a court deputy read aloud the name of the case, United States of America versus Donald J. Trump, he shook his head in disapproval. And then there's a story.
Judge also said.
Yes.
Judge also told him of these five different things that aren't written down. If you break any of these, you bring him in and back into state custody. He said, we'll take you in if you violate these, including making threats.
Nice.
So he is under kind of a, he is muzzled. He does not appreciate it. That's why when he got on his plane yesterday, he said, this town's a shithole. He couldn't talk about the people involved. Because it'd be innocent jail time.
Well, I hope that Fannie in Georgia carries through on somehow it filtered down that when he gets arraigned in Georgia, there will be a mugshot and there will be fingerprints because he's just a common citizen.
Yes. At some point, normalcy must be pursued in this case. And thank you over to the Guardian. I always appreciate an opportunity to get Shakespearean. Thank yous are in order. Thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Jeremy. And, of course, again, thank you to Christopher for getting us started. We are down to $750 with an hour to go in the program, $750 to go. So $150 and the prayer meeting Wednesday that never was because I screwed up the Podbean upload and called it Thursday, will be fully covered. So thank you. Thank you. And I've had some notes from Democratic Underground via Ralphs. I have no doubt that this will be wonderful. We've got a little something to, a little bit of audio. Well, or maybe it's... Well, it goes back to something Nitwit Nero said today, and it seems that he is intent. And again, it's a strategery. He's intent on violating every norm. And so over on his rickety, falling apart, rattle-trap social media platform, Tripe Social, he said, all caps, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. Remember, let's all remember that he got his start in public media, not with The Apprentice, but with WWE. This is all a wrestling match, he thinks. And something inside his addled brain thinks that he is immune somehow. But as Rick Wilson pointed out, and I think Rick Wilson is a devotee of hashtag STS, stoke the stroke. We're coming after you, Donald. We're going to break you, humiliate you, defeat you at the ballot box, shatter your movement. You'll spend your last sorry years weeping in a lonely prison cell, your hideous legacy, a warning to future generations, your shame eternal.
Well said.
Tell us how you really feel, Rick Wilson.
Was he involved with WWE before or after he was involved with that Miss Teen Universe fiasco?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think that's before.
WWE was before?
I think so. I want to say
because
that.
Because his running through the dressing room at the Miss Teen pageants was legendary. Or he should have been busted then.
Well, and you watch all these boobleheads, sycophants, Trump sycophants on the, you know, on the squawk box. And hidden behind the hidden message behind everything that they're talking about defending Trump is he deserves special dispensation because he was president. And it goes contrary to everything that this country stands for. That is not supposed to be the case. But that's the autocratic mindset. That's when you start going down that cultish rabbit hole. You have to be in that kind of mindset. And that they think he's special.
Well, but we have Nixon to thank for that, and Jerry Ford.
And Reagan, and W, and...
in particular with Nixon, when Jerry Ford pardoned him because he had been the president and the country could not withstand the horror of thinking that they had a president who was an asshole.
Our long national nightmare, right?
And a criminal asshole at that.
Yeah. I've enjoyed the party-wide whining that if they can do this to him, they can do it to you. Well, no shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
If
you try to overturn the government, they're going to do it to you, too. Yes.
Yeah. If I broke a law, they'd arrest me tomorrow. There would be no questions. Be in the cell. See you later.
Exactly, Jeremy.
I fought the law, and the law won. No singing, damn it. It'd be nice to
Then there's the couple of cases of people who dealt with a single document that was classified, and they were arrested and incarcerated immediately and awaiting trial.
Reality winner.
And there was a man that got nailed too for the same thing. I think maybe that kid that disseminated the documents in his Discord group. When they caught him, he was simply they went to the house, picked him up, and hauled his ass to jail awaiting trial.
They just arrested two ex-Navy guys for trading China supposedly yesterday.
Yes.
They do it to other people on the daily.
And the thing is, those two sailors, and this is in no wise they were selling shit to China, and both Chinese of extraction. They sold for cheap. The one guy, I think he got $15,000. I mean, Jesus. At least get enough money to squirrel away so that when you get out when you're 90, you got rent money.
Shit, $15,000 won't even buy you a decent used car.
No. Oh, by the way, there's an interesting angle to that espionage case. In watching the coverage of it, it cut to B-roll footage of a helicopter carrier. And something inside me went, oh no. The guy was serving aboard the USS Essex. And it is the successor vessel to the name of the noble carrier that my father served on. And I was like, damn it! But, and it's, I guess it's presently stationed at San Diego. But that's a disturbing story. Hey, Sharon, thank you so much. We're now down to 7:25. Thank you, Sharon. That's very kind of you, and we all do so appreciate it. I had a note from Matt in San Francisco. Jack Smith. At this point, I think he's just fucking with Trump. I mean, what are the chances of the indictment for January 6th being 45 pages? 45 for 45. I hadn't noticed that. Wait a minute.
I think Matt is on to something there. I absolutely do. The den mother doesn't fuck around.
No, the den mother misses nothing. Direct line to the goddess of irony, because that's goddess of irony territory. I may have to sacrifice a couple of rubber chickens at midnight. But there, you know, there's that, and the idea that he expected to be called President Trump. The country has only one president at a time, and I mean,
you know, she enjoyed that. You know, she really enjoyed that. Good for her.
And really, and straighten him up. And so, Kyle Cheney put out a scum over on Scummer and said, Donald Trump swore in court yesterday he would not attempt to influence or intimidate witnesses, retaliate against anyone, or in any way attempt to obstruct the administration of justice. Are you prepared to comply? The magistrate judge asked.
Yes,
Trump replied. And then, bang.
If you go after me, I'm coming after you.
He can't help himself.
And so Joyce Vance, who shows up as a legal commentator on MSNBC, she's also a professor at the University of Alabama School of Law. She said, as a prosecutor, I'd be sorely tempted to make a motion to revoke Trump's pretrial bond and put him in custody. Let him explain it to the judge.
Yes. You said the same thing about Roger Stone.
And I get it, but I'm a firm adherent to the ancient legal maxim of give them enough rope.
Yeah,
that's to hang themselves, because
Your Honor, I'm sorry. I didn't realize people would take it that way. I promise to be good this time.
On the other hand, however, sort of like the 45-page indictment, 45. Oh, Matt, that's up there with playing a Beatles record backwards. I mean, that's just
you know
good.
What? Hold on, just a sec. I'm standing and giving a Matt a standing O.
Oh, nice little golf clap.
But that is fucking, I mean.
But the thing is, if you, much like the indictment, if you come in with a raft of stuff, it's a hell of a lot harder to defend. And the prosecution team knows this happened, and they know he's going to keep doing it. And so let him do it 5 or 10 or 15 times, because that won't take more than 3 or 4 days. And then haul his ass back in before the 28th. Because, see, the magistrate cut them slack because there were several dates offered. And John Lauro said, oh, we definitely want the 28th because, you know, it's about delay, the furthest possible date. But if he manages to thoroughly fuck himself, then if a pickup order goes out, there is no schedule. Pickup orders usually include the word. You want to use it, Steve? Wait, you're not a criminal guy.
Yeah, I'm not.
Forthwith. Forthwith. And forthwith means yesterday. No fucking around. Go get him. Bring him in here. I don't care if he's in. I don't care if he's in his Winnie the Pooh pajamas.
He's got ketchup stains on his PJs.
Has anyone mentioned that last night John, whatever his name, Lauro, went on two different news programs and outright admitted to Trump's conspiracy? He told Fox News, and I think he told Onan's host, that when Trump was told what was going on, basically he couldn't do this, there's no way he's not leaving the office, he point blank looked at them and said, no, I like option D, trying to stop this. He knew it was illegal. He knew it was against the law when he did it.
Yeah, what was the comment, Jeremy, he said to Pence? You're too good or you're,
no,
too,
you're
honest.
Too honest.
You're too honest. Ding!
We're gonna fry him as Pence's notes are going to take him down. Pence took notes on all their conversations. Pence is the star witness.
So, Steve, are we going to get the Colonel Jessup moment that we've all been waiting for, what, 8 years?
I don't give a flying fuck. I want to see him... You know, I want to see him pull a Jim Baker when Jim Baker went off to jail. I want to see him sobbing and soiling himself.
Yeah, or at the end of Fargo. That's priceless.
But will we? Nothing is implausible at this point. Nothing.
No.
Nothing.
Back up. I want to fall back and associate myself with my previous remarks that I don't care if they dig up and reanimate zombie Clarence Darrow or zombie John Adams in his prime at the Boston Massacre trial. No competent lawyer can, knowing the fiduciary duty that he owes to his client and the duty of candor he owes or she to the tribunal, put that pustule on the stand. So, no, Christopher, you do not get your much desired by not only you but many of us Colonel Jessup moment.
Such a shame.
Yeah. Unless at some point he fires everyone and says, I'm going to do it myself.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
And that brings me to... It was cute, wasn't it?
Yes.
That brings me to another thing. I've already seen the bad impressionist sketch work. I mean, the courtroom sketch artist is good. Make no mistake. But this will not do for the trial. This trial has to have cameras in the courtroom, and it's not unmanageable. Okay. If we can have a camera in the House of Representatives and a camera in the Senate of the United States, and you know this goes back to the Supreme Court of the United States too. It is the third year of the third decade of the 21st freaking century, and our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesty still say that they're camera shy. And so anybody who wants to listen to oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court has to sit there listening to audio like it's 1930 damn five and they're listening to a fireside chat by FDR. That is ridiculous. Cameras don't even necessarily have to have a human behind them. You can set up a couple of static cameras in the courtroom. And there are big courtrooms. You can set up three would be fine. You know, use the double 45, just like the lighting theory. Two at a 45 degree angle to the front of the courtroom, and one straight down the middle. Operate them remotely, and you're done. And we all get to see it.
And I have one more request to add to that, Robin. Can we get like a scaled down version of that balloon, the baby Trump balloon that flew over Buckingham Palace?
Chris, you're not helping. Stop it.
I want that in the back. The camera shot on that too, please.
Maybe it could be like a screen border.
Or on the crawl.
Trump's a big fat man, baby. No, but seriously, because it is not a for sure thing. And that's why some members of the Democratic caucus in Congress are saying this has to be televised. This absolutely must be televised. And having mentioned the Supreme Court, a couple of other Supreme Court stories. For starters, I've got it here somewhere, sorry. What I think it was Sonia Sotomayor upbraided Sammy Bad Breath and said, of course Congress has the right to regulate us.
It was Kagan.
Was it Kagan?
Yeah. And she just smacked that little fucker down, that little Vienna sausage. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, there it is. We are not imperial, Justice Kagan said. She said, of course Congress can regulate the Supreme Court. Congress funds the court. Congress has traditionally made changes to the court's structure and composition.
It's right
Congress,
there.
Congress
you
has
historically...
It's in the Constitution. Congress has historically made changes to the court's appellate jurisdiction. And there's a provision in the Constitution that says something like the Supreme... Okay, I admit I don't like it when Supreme Court justices say there's something in the Constitution, something like. If mullahs in Iran can memorize the entire Quran, maybe we should have a requirement that every Supreme Court justice be able to recite the entire Constitution of the United States once a year. And there's a provision in the Constitution that was supposed to be funny. And there's a provision in the Constitution that says something like the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction under regulations that Congress provides. And then she got all originalist on him. I love this when it happens. And she said, given the fact that it just can't be that the court is the only institution that somehow is not subject to any checks and balances from anybody else. I mean, we're not imperial. There's that.
And then there's that part that. Weird part that says regulation.
Yeah.
I've posted a link to the story in both chat rooms.
Okay. But what I said earlier about people. Democratic members of Congress, dozens of House Democrats yesterday said we absolutely, a letter led by Adam Schiff, Jerry Connolly, Hank Johnson, Benny Thompson of Mississippi. It is imperative the conference ensures timely access to accurate and reliable information surrounding these cases, and all of their proceedings. Given the extraordinary national importance to our democratic institutions and the need for transparency, if the public is to fully accept the outcome, it will be vitally important for it to witness, as directly as possible, how the trials are conducted, the strength of the evidence adduced, and the credibility of witnesses. We urge the conference to take additional steps, including live broadcasting, to ensure the facts of this case are brought forward, unfiltered, to the public.
And now what's interesting...
That's got to become a drumbeat.
But what's interesting about that is when you look at the way the January 6th hearings were presented in their public testimony, there was no grandstanding by any of the members of the committee. They simply laid out a factual number. People were not angling for that little snippet that could become a campaign ad or a leader on Fox News or something of that sort to build their own case. And what they're asking for, because courtrooms tend to be, in a sense, that dry, here's the facts, here's the facts, here's the facts number. A lot of Republicans are not going to want to see that go on because, my God, the people of the United States may understand how things work for a change instead of being blown up their ass with our snippets.
Yeah, they're going to come to realize the sky is blue and not pink.
Yeah, and the earth is round and not flat.
Yeah.
What do you mean the Constitution ain't got nothing in there about Jesus?
Yeah, I know. And I had missed this one. Apparently, he went so far as to attack Jack Smith's wife.
Yeah, here we go.
Clementine Caligula did. He made a statement of multiple pages, called Jack Smith a dirty, politically motivated investigation. And then there was a segment called Jack Smith's Wife, Katie Schiavini, is a Biden donor. She produced a documentary about Michelle Obama, and she worked on Citizens United, an anti-Citizens United film titled Dark Money. Jack Smith's wife is a Biden donor and produced a fawning Michelle Obama documentary. That was spoken out loud by his nasty spokescreep, Liz Harrington. And at this point, keep talking. There just
keep
might
in that hole.
There just might be some consequences banging around out there. Meanwhile, the saddest man in America is probably, if you think about it, Mike Pencilneck Geek. There he was. He sold his Christian soul to a man who couldn't find a church. If there was one on every block, and there are.
He could sell meat for the mail.
Well, he did manage to find the street, the church across the street from the White House, and then he held the Bible upside down.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, he was at the Indiana State Fair. Moment. Pollen. He was at the Indiana State Fair, and he is. He's probably the saddest man in America. I mean,
sadder than Rudy?
Infinitely.
Oh.
I was all set. I was loyal. I did everything Daddy told me to do. And I was going to be vice president again. And then in 2028, I was going to run for president. And that would have been 12 straight years. And I do mean straight. Of Republican presidents. Maybe 16. But he ruined it. He ruined it. And now I'm out here talking about Joe Biden's inflation when it's at 3%. And so it's killing him because, really, Trump was daddy.
He was. We all remember the photos of him standing behind him.
But the language
adoringly.
The language is getting a little stronger.
Yes.
I'd hoped it wouldn't come to this. I'd hoped this issue and the judgment of the president's actions that day would be left to the American people. See, I still love you, Daddy. Now it's been brought in a criminal indictment. Sadly, the president was surrounded by a group of crackpot lawyers that kept telling him what his itching ears wanted to hear. Itching ears? Itching? Itching. But see, it's the lawyer's fault, not Daddy's.
Yeah.
It's never Daddy's fault.
He can't go that one next step, can he?
No, because he's already at a polling level that requires a scanning electron microscope to find.
As of now, he's still unhung.
Hanged. We don't know what's going on down there. And I don't like thinking.
I don't
want
to know.
Exactly. Oh, thank
you,
Simon.
Let mommy know. Mommy knows that's
mother.
Enough.
Mother.
Mother. Mm. Mother knows.
Robin.
Mother
knows. Robin, you're getting dangerously close to ruining dinner.
Oh, according to Simon, I've already ruined his snack out in the Pacific time zone.
Oops, yeah. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that, Suman. But give yourself a cowbell, Suman says, for And I do mean I love it when y'all get the little asides. And I give yourself a cowbell for "and I do mean straight" when referring to Mike Pence. Thank you. So there was a, I got up this morning and watched my filthy morning habit. And they took off running. And at this point in time, Joe's and the crowd are just having fun sniping at Precious Princess Senator Lindsey Graham. Because Lindsey is indignant. He is positively indignant. He's got the vapors, possibly the fantods.
Attacked the jury system. Now Lindsey Graham's attacking the jury. We know, and they know, the bedrock of our judicial system. We, the people. That's how Madison had it set up. And Applebaum wrote this yesterday. If the Republican Party responds to the Trump indictment solely by attacking courts and judges, and its leaders continue to work to delegitimize the legal system, I'm not sure how we recover. Well, let's make this very simple for people, Charlie. Our former party, from Election Day 2020 through January the 6th, trashed American democracy.
Right.
Told Americans and the world you can't trust fair and free elections if our side doesn't win. Fox News paid like close to $1 billion for the lies that they spread about the election. And they're going to probably have to pay close to another $1 billion. We turned the page. What lesson is learned from that? Absolutely nothing. Because now they're trashing the judicial system, which I would say is Madison's like crown jewel. It's the great leveler of Madisonian democracy, but now they're trashing that again for Donald Trump. Do you agree with Ann here?
We need a little fife and drum corps for when Joe gets like this in the background, you know, just like Oliver Wendell Douglas in Green Acres.
I might be a little extreme for me, but she says I'm not sure how we recover. No. I know Mika does.
No,
go ahead.
I could not agree more strongly with what Ann Applebaum is saying. Yes, what Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio are saying is pathetic, and it is same old, but it's also, and I think this is where we need to pause for a moment, this is dangerous. What you are seeing is a full-on attack on the legitimacy of the constitutional order. They are attacking the FBI. They are attacking the Justice Department. They are attacking the judges. They are attacking the juries. They are saying that the actions of the juries and the judges are illegitimate. What does that mean? Where do you go with that when you basically have knocked over all of the props of the rule of law? Now, they may not be, you know, sitting around saying, okay, we are going to be rejecting, you know, James Madison's design here. But, I mean, this is where their hackery has led them. And it is dangerous because if, in fact, you know, some of this rhetoric that you're seeing now, you know, the Biden regime or the FBI is the Gestapo, I mean, keep in mind, this goes beyond demonization. Because you don't argue with the Gestapo, you don't litigate with the Gestapo, you go to war against the Gestapo. So the question is, if you doubt the legitimacy of the government, what do you think that people out in the country are going, how do you think they're going to react to all that?
Charlie, let me follow up on that too. Yesterday we get the news out of New Hampshire that I guess it was this weekend. You actually had the number two Republican saying that he was going to go after the bureaucracy by, quote, slitting their throats, slitting the throats of bureaucrats. This.
OK, we did that part, the throat slitting.
I'm begging him, come slit my throat. Anyway, bye.
Hey, Kevin, hey, Kevin. What's up?
Hey, yeah, this federal employee, I'm, you know, bring it on, Mr. DeSantis.
Yeah, he's threatening to slit the throats of union people. I mean, I know he's from Florida, but I mean, really? Do you you want to do that with union folks?
Veterans?
Yeah.
You know? Somebody, you know, I was thinking about this earlier. You know, you got Adam Kinzinger. He stood up there and, you know, Cheney. And you got some other people, but we need some good, not tough guys, but you know what I'm saying here. You need some like superhero type Republicans and Democrats, whatever, just to kind of like stand up to these people, not just Trump. You know, DeSantis, the crazies in the Congress, you know, at every turn, you know, you got Rick Wilson's out there, you know, Lincoln Project's out there doing a good job. But tell you something, boy, he like you said, he'll double down. He won't walk away from this. You know what? Well, you better watch out if he doubles down or triples down, because one of these veterans probably will. You know what I mean? Or somebody. I don't know. I don't know, man.
He's kind of be careful of what's his name, Agent Fred. Be careful what you say, Kevin. Right?
Yeah.
Be careful your next sentence. Yeah.
Exactly.
But right. But you said superheroes on the Republican side. Well, Liz Cheney, I mean, yeah, she's still Republican, but she ain't in office. Adam Kinzinger, gone. The only guy, the only guy out there with the real rhetoric.
But I hate CNN, huh? So I never watch CNN. Kinzinger, I seen him on, I guess he's on CNN, but I don't watch CNN, so.
Oh, is he really? He's a contributor there?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they do the both sides thing every time.
Sure, sure. Now, Christie, he isn't pulling any punches. Now, would you call him a superhero?
No, I don't like Christie.
Does that go too far?
No, I mean,
but he's the guy.
I like how it's going after Trump and all, but I can't stand Christie from Jump Street.
Oh,
anyway.
He'd be a dreadful president. He'd be awful. Awful. Absolutely awful. But you got to give him his props. He's taking it hard to him. He's the only guy out there.
The Bridgegate thing in the beach, that was like, for me, seriously, bro?
There's one other Republican candidate who made the comment that the only reason Trump is running is to stay out of jail.
Yep.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's Will Hurd. Will Hurd, former congressman from Texas. And whenever I hear Chris Christie going after Trump, which... Thank you. Good. Keep at it. Still don't like you. Have you ever been to a play, and it turns out that the member of the starting cast is out that night, and there's an announcement that comes over the PA that says, "Playing the role of this." Well, I hear Chris Christie, I hear that announcement. Playing the role of Liz Cheney this evening will be Chris Christie. Basically, that's what he's doing. Because a long time ago, we talked about the fact that Liz Cheney should run, I suggested, in the Republican primary and just hammer him relentlessly.
I wonder why she didn't.
There was a better dollar elsewhere.
Who was the Democrat during the 2016 John something that got taken down for trading sex tapes with women? He was from New York, I think.
Oh, Anthony Weiner?
I know you're talking about. Well, he had the good hair, Robin.
Yes, that guy. I'm going here with this because everyone screams about Jack Smith. Guess who Jack Smith prosecuted? Fucking him.
Oh, yeah? What the fuck was his name?
Took him down.
John Edwards?
Yes.
John Edwards was prosecuted by
Thank
Jack
you.
Smith.
John Edwards.
Yes.
Yeah. He prosecuted John Edwards?
Yes.
Wow.
Along with Milosevic. Along with a bunch of different people.
That's beautiful.
He's taking on the scary of the scary. I trust Jack Smith. 100%.
100%. Yes.
100%.
So when it comes down to it and it's time to try the case... Will Jack Smith be the one standing there at the podium asking the questions?
I sure as fuck hope so.
In D.C., I almost guarantee it, yes.
And his Subway sandwich shop is right next door, so he was not going to miss out on that. That's where he has lunch every day.
You know, I heard something interesting. I was, like, listening to my phone. I was still working, but I was listening to Deadline White House on my phone, and David Jolly came on. I don't know if any of you guys caught this, but he's usually pretty good. But he started saying about, well, you know, it took him 2 years to get to this point, and now all of a sudden you say you're going to have a trial within the next 6 months or 7 months or whatever. He goes, I don't know. He went to the point where he thinks that letting it go till even after the election, do it the right way type thing. I was kind of a little surprised. Wait, that he said
who
that.
Said that, Kevin?
David Jolly.
No.
White House. Probably dig it up somewhere, I guess, maybe if you try. But yeah, he kind of like was like, yeah, I think, you know, in other words, don't give them any ammunition by going after them too quick. In other words, that was his point. He thinks by having a speedy trial that it plays into their hands. But
that's another moment where you want to check all the boxes. You know, the defendant has a right to a speedy trial, so under the federal rules, you announce your desire to have a speedy trial. And that forces the defendant then to say, no, I don't want a speedy trial. No, it's okay, fine. And
when the trial starts, how long you really think it's going to take? A couple weeks, maybe tops, three.
I don't even know how long Mike Pence is going to be on the stand.
We're only talking one defendant here. I mean, there's a lot of witnesses, right?
Yeah, so, it's
a lot of witnesses.
The prosecution's case in chief is going to be those six unindicted co-conspirators: Mike Pence, Bill Barr, the heads of the relevant agencies that are referenced in the indictment. 45 for 45. Matt, you really put that one in the cheap seats tonight. I'm no good at this. I mean, I have no idea. But
about a month,
jury selection will take 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
Unless Billable Rick tells me otherwise. Then
it could be longer. That's going to be.
And then once and there will be pre-trial motions. There will be motions in limine. There will be motions to suppress. Most of which the defense should lose. There will of course be a motion for change of venue and a motion to recuse. Madam, is it not true that you are a Negro? You must recuse. All Negroes. Yeah. What? And Jack Smith stands up and says, "Your Honor, I would like to direct the court's attention and ask the court to take judicial review of Herb Cain. He's dead, but I do have. And by the way, if we could somehow manage to bring in, we're at $7.25. If we could bring in $126, that's a manageable number. $126 gets us down to a level where we're not looking at $1,000 on Monday. Okay? That would mean we would have a fundraising goal of $999 on Monday. And it would be great just to get Wednesday's misnamed program fully funded. So just mentioning that. I've got a Mitch McConnell update. It's almost as though we've forgotten that Mitch... Well, Mitch glitched the other day.
I think he's still trying to finish his sentence from, like, what, 2 weeks ago?
Now, let's not be mean.
All right.
So, over at the Atlantic, Vanity Fair. Pablo Manriquez has an article about Mitch. And in it is an anonymously quoted Republican senator who said... And I don't necessarily, well, I guess maybe this is part of it. The pain from his polio leaves him totally paralyzed sometimes, like unable to walk or move or even speak because it hurts so bad. The pain that used to be confined to his leg causes, like, a spasm up his spine that takes over his entire body.
Oh, boy.
I'm guessing that's like a younger, like, senator, you know, like. And we're certainly not going to devote the time that we devoted to figuring out who Co-Conspirator 6 is. And as long as that Co-Conspirator 6 is not named, I'm keeping my money on Mrs. Thomas, who helped ginny up an insurrection. I'm going to ride that terrible pun like a pony.
I'd love it to be her. I hope so much you're right, Robin.
I know.
Oh, it'd be so great.
Oh, a little more about David Jolly. Darlene in Connecticut says, yeah, and David Jolly also said the weaker speaker wouldn't last in the House, that he'd leave in a month or so after the maggot succeeded in anointing another more palatable maggot representative over him. Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Because handing the gavel to an Uber maggot is going to make it harder for the allegedly normal Republicans to pass legislation.
Glenn Kirshner thinks January or February trial. And that's a reasonable, he thinks that's a reasonable, with all the motions and everything else that you know, and the jury selection and everything else. So he thinks by January or February they should be able to get it going.
And by the way, the Mar-a-Lago, the Mogalard-ass Mussolini has finally gotten to the point where he's pleading with the Supreme Court on social media to fix it for him.
Of course.
Of course he is.
He went back to... See, he went through a flurry on Tripe Social, sending out various and sundry tripes and retripes. Crazy! Oh. My political opponent has hit me with a barrage of weak lawsuits, including DA, AG, and others, which require massive amounts of my time and money to adjudicate. Now, this is a pretty nice little peep into what's going on with the shrieking of the spirochetes fluttering around in that gelatinous glob that sloshes around between his ears and passes for brains. You're costing me a lot of money. Resources that would have gone into ads and rallies will now have to be spent fighting these radical left thugs in numerous courts throughout the country. I'm leading in all polls, including against Crooked Joe, but this is not a level playing field. It is election interference, and the Supreme Court must intercede. MAGA! The only problem is, with the exception of Clarence Pubes on the Cook Can Fappy Thomas, they've largely been unsympathetic to him. The Supreme shot down the indicted and now suspended Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, in his attempt to fawningly overturn the results of the election by lawsuit. They had no sympathy whatsoever for his Nitwit Nero's claim of retaining executive privilege once he was out of office.
Yeah, even the fish. What was the one decision, Robin, that was 8-1 that only Fappy sided with Trump?
I think that was the one trying to keep documents away from the House Select Committee.
Yeah, okay.
It was hiding Jenny's involvement with the rally on January 6th.
Right.
I only say your recitation of Trump's trough there was wrong in one way. You didn't change your voice enough towards the end, like when he couldn't say God bless the United States and the dentures falling out. That would have happened in that long a statement.
Yeah, God bless the United States.
And I guess some of the folks who know which fork to use with the shrimp and which fork to use with the oysters Rockefeller were shocked by Magistrate Upadhyaya over at NPR. They said, the judge said the most important condition of release is not committing any new crimes. She actually told Nitwit Nero, it is a crime to influence a juror or try to threaten or bribe a witness or retaliate against anyone.
I understand. And that's what he then went out and did.
Uh-huh.
And Magistrate Upadhyaya said, and I butchered that woman's name, and I'm so sorry. You've heard your conditions of release. It is important that you comply to your conditions of release. You may be held pending trial in this case if you violate conditions of release. And foreign policy, national security, and political affairs expert David Rothkopf said, Trump admonished not to commit any crimes as a term of his release. This guy obstructs justice like most of us breathe. And as the judge observed, it's also a crime to influence a juror. Same true, re a witness. It could be a wild ride. Andrew Weissman was a bit surprised. Usually the standard condition that a judge emphasizes, and I thought when I heard it was going to be, she reiterated, the most important thing is, I thought it was going to be that you have to show up at each court appearance. That's the most important thing. That's what bail is for, that you will show up in court. When I heard that the standard condition and the most important thing is don't commit another crime and don't tamper with a juror, well, my reaction was, I was a prosecutor for 21 years, I was a defense lawyer for 5 years, and I have never heard that. Well, well, well. So that must have been, that must have been right humiliating.
Well, Robin, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeremy. I apologize.
Just to be quick, I thought it was pretty interesting and telling that at the hearing yesterday, all of the superior court judges were in there to show a support for the magistrate. They all were in the back of the room, including the one that will hear this trial.
Were they?
Yes, I guess they do that. I know a guy, we talked to a guy at night who was part of the Washington, D.C. district doing criminal cases and handling classified stuff most of his adult life after the Marines. And he said in that district, in most cases, including the magistrate cases, all the judges in the back of the courtroom to show their approval of what that magistrate is doing, basically tell people not to fuck around.
Wow.
Well, how many times have we been told this is unprecedented? So maybe it is
really tired of that word.
Yeah. So maybe it's fitting that the magistrate admonishes him in an unprecedented kind of way. So fuck that guy.
Well, and we how about a little good news? Anybody up for some good news on the way out the door?
Yes.
Via Reuters. Federal judge in Connecticut ruling on a suit by the National Association for Gun Rights, NAGGR. They sued the state of Connecticut back last September and said that the 2013 assault rifle ban. And they cited the damned godforsaken Bruin decision as making that ban unconstitutional. Well, U.S. District Judge Janet Bond Arderton in New Haven issued a 74-page ruling and said, evidence from the state is persuasive that assault weapons are instead more often sought out for their militaristic characteristics and are often used in crimes and mass shootings. The nation has a long-standing history and tradition of regulating those aspects of the weapons or manners of carry that correlate with rising firearm violence. Oh, she used the Bruin language against them. And said that the Connecticut assault weapons ban is consistent with the purpose of regulating aspects of weapons or manners of carry that correlate with rising firearm violence. So that was a huge victory. That was a huge victory for Connecticut Attorney General William Tong, who said that the ruling affirms that Connecticut's assault weapon and large capacity magazine bans remain on strong legal footing after the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Bruin. And this is going to be important because if it withstands
appellate scrutiny, and then, of course, winds up before our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, they're going to have to deal with their own damned words.
No, no, we didn't mean that kind of history.
But in point of fact, even Heller, that horrible, horrible decision authored by fat, dead Tony Scalia, says that states and municipalities have a right to have reasonable regulations upon firearms. By the way, Dave in the Blind says, trust fund baby needs his diaper changed. The money he's spending on lawyers came from his donors, the jet and security team that he's flying around on and being protected by or paid for by the United States people, the limo he goes to court in, ditto, trust fund baby needs his diaper changed. He might actually have to spend one of his own nickels defending his crappy ass. And here's a bit of good news. Many state Republican parties are nearly broke. Stoke the stroke. Yeah, I saw that article too, Dave. The state Republican parties all around the country are an absolute shambles. They cited Michigan in particular. That's a full-on hot mess. And here's a weird one, kind of just for Billable Rick, because it's his neck of the woods. A superior court judge in Orange County, a 72-year-old man named Jeffrey Ferguson, got booked into jail in Anaheim on $1 million bail. Because remember, the Constitution says a reasonable bail is available in all cases, except for murder. The judge didn't have to set bond at all. Well, it turns out that Jeffrey Ferguson was at home in Anaheim Hills, and when the cops got there, they found his wife, Cheryl Ferguson, age 65, dead from at least one gunshot wound. He's been a Superior Court judge since 2015. He spent 3 decades at the Orange County District Attorney's Office and was even president of the Orange County Bar Association from 2012 to 2014. And the mugshot photo I have here, oddly enough, he looks a bit like Trump, and I bet I know how he votes. And one more thing, and nobody's surprised. I mentioned the fact that, you know, Oppenheimer and Barbie made all kinds of noise with their opening and the money they brought in. Well, the third leading money draw was a horrible little pseudo-documentary called Sound of Freedom. And it's all about child trafficking. Only, you know, it plays footsie with notions of cue balls, right, general right-wing paranoia. Groomers! So at one point in time, a guy named Fabian Marta, who shows up in the credits as an investor in this film exposing child trafficking, he said,
the Sound of Freedom movie tackles a very tough subject and took extraordinary effort to bring it to movie theaters. I'm proud to have been a small part of it. If you see the movie, look for Fabian Marta and family at the very end of the credits.
Jim the Weasel Caviezel plays a former federal agent who goes around rescuing children from exploitation. And, of course, Jim the Weasel Caviezel is a cue ball. And lo and behold, on the 21st of July past, Fabian Marta. Was charged with and arrested 2 days later on a charge of felony, wait for it, child kidnapping. God, it's always projection or confession.
Surprise, surprise, Sergeant Carter.
Now, and I'd be curious, I don't know if Steve's still around. We had that little conversation about bail earlier. Huh. Now, this is a guy charged with felony child kidnapping. Bond was set at $15,000.
That's all?
That's it.
Holy fuck! What?
And then they turned him loose on his own recognizance.
Ah!
But do you see there what I was saying earlier about me not understanding the bail conditions for Julius Geezer? Bond was set at $15,000, but he was released July 24th on personal recognizance. So you set the bond amount and then say, I'm turning you loose on your promise to be good, but it might cost you $15,000. I don't understand why there's not a dollar amount attached to Nitwit Nero's bonds in either of these federal cases. I simply don't.
What happened to his passport? Does anyone know?
Nothing on the passport and any of that stuff that Steve and Billable dug up.
Fuck. It's ridiculous.
It's troubling, to say the least.
The only question is, where's his little bungalow or villa? Is it going to be in Woody Poot's neighborhood, or like in Sochi, or is it going to be in?
Well, I mean, Sochi's part of one of the better neighborhoods in Nova Russia.
Yeah.
Well, he should always go down to Paraguay and shack up with the Bushes. They've got a big spread down in Paraguay.
You know.
Well, they hate him though.
But again, it's the dead of winter, and they're recording all-time record high temperatures all over the global South.
Paraguay year round is sort of like the beach at Waikiki.
But wasn't the Bush compound the Bush compound was up by the Bolivian border?
It's still equatorial South America.
Roger, he's not going to be welcomed in with open arms down there.
Hell, the Bushes never use it.
By the way, this is cowbell worthy. Message coming in from Arnold. Chris Christie, because we were talking about Chris Christie a minute ago. Chris Christie is a less attractive, less cool, less smart, less hip, less sweet, less sensitive. Pay attention to all those lesses. Less attractive, less cool, less smart, less hip, less sweet, less sensitive. Tony Soprano.
Ah! Yeah. Ding, ding. That is cowbell. Perfect.
And lo and behold, here we are at 3 hours of conversation radio at its very finest. Thanks, everybody. It's been great talking with y'all. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I presume that the back porch, everybody will get up out of their chairs, go around the mansion to the back porch and hang out there and continue to talk if you want after the program is done. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much.
Well, Robin kicked herself again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, I didn't.
She's still there.
You went silent. Pregnant pause. Sorry.
Yeah, I can't do that. But thanks, everybody. thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors this evening and every evening. Again, we're down to 725. If over the course of the weekend we can knock out $126, we won't at least we'll at least not have a $1,000 plus fundraising hole to fill. And there are still bills. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Hope everything's okay, Steve and George Stan. I imagine you're just probably totally exhausted. Wouldn't be surprised. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live. Remember, like and subscribe at the platform wherever you get the podcast. Thank you. Leave a comment. It matters. Tell your friends and neighbors. Let's add on to this conversation. I love to meet new people, new places. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Get your booster, y'all. If you're eligible. Wear your masks around maggots. They don't care anything about you, and they certainly don't even much care about themselves. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if a great big orange adipose waddling sack of sin and hate comes toward you, say, "Help me! Mommy, I'm coming for you. You come for me, I'll come for you." I saw that in a mob movie once. Wow. Avoid Mango Mussolini like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.